Israelscene.com. This is Israelscene.com. I'm Steve Ornstein.
And this is Yoram.
Seen through the eyes of both of us, two crazy characters passionate about everything that happens in Israel. Our programs are about political, social, and cultural experiences in our beloved country. And hello, Yoram.
Stephen, how do you do?
What's happening?
Well, I thought we could continue talking. We should continue talking, or we could continue talking. So let's continue talking about these recent elections and elections passed in this beloved country of ours. One of the things you brought up before was Begin, the excitement of Begin's election when you were here. Begin first won an election in 1977. That was several years after the Yom Kippur War, and partly as a result of the disillusionment brought on by the Yom Kippur War, and partly as a result of the inevitable corruption which swept into the Labor Party, which was the founding party of the State of Israel, after many years of basically uncontested power. My personal feeling about Begin is that politically he was in an incredible disaster for the State of Israel, and we are continuing and will in the future, in this next withdrawal cycle, pay enormous sums of money, which is a very valuable resource.
In what way was he a disaster?
Well, he made a deal that essentially said to the religious parties, I'll give you all the money you need to support your religious institutions and to support your religious way of life. You give me, in other words, you vote for me, all the money I want in order to establish more and more Jewish settlements in the territories in Judea, Samaria, and Gaza. Now, the result of both at the moment, obviously, was a large outpouring of money, which continued for 10, 20 years. Now we're going to have to pay another enormous amount of money to bring those settlements or those Jews back from those settlements that Begin was so passionate to create in the West Bank. We already spent several billion shekels to bring the Jews back from Gaza. If Olmert's plan goes forward, we will spend more billions of shekels to bring the Jews back from Judea and Samaria, all of which was money that could have far better be spent on education, on taking care of people, on developing part of our educational system. Part of the flower of our educational system is the high tech that creative high-tech industry that we have in Israel is part of. I mean, you just don't get people going into those.
We can say about Begin was that he really did love the country. That whether we agreed with his politics, he was doing it because he truly believed it was in the best interest of the State of Israel and the Jewish people.
That was essentially why I made the delineation of my disagreement with Begin politically, because as a person with personal integrity and political integrity, I think he stood in the best line behind people like Ben-Gurion and Sharet and those who came before him and Levi Eshkol in placing the interests of the state as he understood it. I mean, we can only do things as we understand them above all other interests. He wasn't interested primarily in being invited to the fanciest parties or in spending time abroad or in all of the trappings.
So what has
of
happened?
Prime ministership.
So what has
After
happened?
Him came Shamir, who was also of the old school, whose politics I also disagree with tremendously, but he too, I believe, was a person whose interest was the State of Israel and the Jewish people, rather than the interests of Shamir having the kind of fancy and fashionable life that it seems many of the politicians that came after them, at least those in the higher ranks of the prime ministership, seem to be very involved in pursuing and believe to be very much the essence of why they go into politics and what they do when they're in politics. You know, this phenomenon of reading the polls to see what's popular as a way of deciding on policy is in some ways a reflection of wanting to be popular, wanting to be fashionable, wanting to be invited to all the best parties, wanting to, you know, to be friends with the right people who
so
are...
So where have we gone wrong? Why all of a sudden are we getting politicians who are more interested in themselves and in their personal power rather than in the Jewish people. If I believe that we have. I believe Netanyahu is a prime example of a person who looks in the mirror every morning and says how great he is and how important he is. And certainly he reflects it in the way he is. And what really annoys me is that he's an extraordinarily charismatic and articulate politician, someone that I actually would love to see represent me in some capacity. Yet at the same time, I totally am afraid of him because I feel that he doesn't work in my interest or in the Jewish nation's interest. And our margin of error in this little splinter of land here is deadly if you make one mistake. I mean, in America, yes, you can make a mistake, and it's just so huge and so embedded in its place that the impact, you know, it can be absorbed for the most part. Here, there isn't any, I feel, any room for that. And I'm sorry to say that I feel the same way about Peretz. And I don't know the man, but just a sense of that he's more interested in himself and his stature than really what's in the best interest of the Jewish people. And I may be totally wrong with him. I just a sense or an intuitive sense I have about him, which really is really why I shuddered about the possibility of voting for Labor. I'm distraught in one sense about the fact that we don't have politicians, at least in our country, who really, that I have seen, who really have that heart and concern that some of the former, like Begin and Shamir and so forth, had, and Golda Meir, I feel, and Ben-Gurion and so forth. I don't know where to go, although I know internationally, if you look around, there aren't any great leaders around either. We're in a kind of a dry spell at this point in time, I think that globally we just don't have the leadership that we might have had in the past. I mean, what's your take?
Well, I also wonder why. What happened? What was the historical or sociological turning point that changed this process from one of this commitment, personal commitment for the greater good, to a personal commitment for the personal good? That would be an interesting issue to explore. I'm not even sure who to ask, whose opinion I would value and I would like to hear and would like to share with others. Strangely enough, I don't know if it's I think one of the most charismatic politicians on the scene today is the president of Iran. I mean, he is talking a talk. Obviously we don't know much about his personal life, but I heard when he was elected that one of the reasons for his popularity was that when he was mayor of Tehran, his previous position, he displayed a kind of personal modesty and a personal commitment to the welfare of the amcha, of the masses of the people of his country or of his city at the time, that inspired people to vote for him as president. Obviously, it's a horrendous danger for everybody else on the planet. Actually, it's a danger for the Iranians as well, ultimately. We had the same phenomenon, you know, when Hitler became the prime minister of the leader of the German people. Now, the picture of him on Time magazine, and people were outraged. But in terms of an individual on the planet, contemporary to the time, whose influence, you know, was so enormous, certainly Stalin, Churchill, Roosevelt in those days were enormous people, and who seemed, of course, Roosevelt was wealthy to begin with. He didn't need to struggle to hang out with the right people. But that seems to be there seems to be a colorlessness to many of the politicians today. Certainly in the West, I don't know that much about the politicians of the East, India, and so on and so forth. But of the Western, the European politicians, there seems to be a great pale quality to them, which might be a reflection again of the fact that everybody wants to be elected. The science of politics now is very, very strong, and the science says you need numbers. It's all about numbers. And the way to get the greatest number of numbers is to appeal to the greatest number of people. And one way to appeal to the greatest number of people is to have as middle-of-the-road, milquetoasty a platform as possible. And to make sure you get the right middle-of-the-road platform, we do all this polling so you know what people are interested in, and that's your position, rather than being who you are and fighting for it.
So you're listening to IsraelScene.com. I'd like to change the subject slightly and talk a little about Hamas. I'm not surprised that Hamas had won the election, considering the fact that they certainly were feeding the poor and the Palestinian Authority were feeding their own pockets at the expense of the poor. And certainly Hamas being in a position of power and responsibility has really, in many ways, has forced them into untenable situations of having to either totally reject as the power in charge, Israel's existence, which it has been doing consistently, or trying to be effective in trying to take care of the people in the Palestinian people in a more with more impact, and they're not doing that at this point in time. And I think that it's been really a blessing for us to have Hamas in the leadership position that it is now, because it really delineates clearly where they stand. I think that the European countries have for too long been wishy-washy about Israel, about Jews in general, and certainly about the Palestinian Authority. And I think they've just been forced against the wall, or a corner, to respond in a negative way against Hamas. And I think that we couldn't have done a better job in many ways if we tried. You know, that doesn't mean that at any time anybody, including Norway now, is the possibility of them meeting a Hamas official, Norway not being in the past a particularly great friend of Israel or the Jews. So I'm just wondering what your take is on this whole thing with Hamas, and what does that do for us in terms of our positions, and how do we move forward having Hamas as running the government there?
In many ways, the out front policy of Hamas, and they make no apologies for it, makes it much easier to understand the situation we're in. For those who listened to our interview with David Bedin might remember that David talks about how the PA, the Fatah, which we thought was the moderate wing of the Palestinian political world, was in fact supportive of Hamas. And now there's no need to, there's less of a possibility to talk around the reality. But I think that Hamas accurately reflects in its attitude towards Israel the basic beliefs of most of the Palestinian people, at least those who count. You have to remember that in the Palestinian world and the Arab world in general, the democratic process that we take so for granted is not the process that in fact is the most operative, even in the circumstances of elections.
Do you really believe that Hamas actually does represent the majority of the people in their politically speaking?
I think the majority of the Arab people, the majority of the Muslim people, including the majority of the Muslim people, believe, because they've been taught. I mean, our beliefs are by and large based on what we are taught. It's not what we're born with. We're not really born with beliefs. We're born with all sorts of things, but, you know, blue eyes, green eyes, but we're not born with beliefs about things. I like red better. I like purple better. But they have been taught. There's an educational process going on in the Arab world and in the entire Muslim world.
As certainly, in the school systems in the Palestinian
school
Authority.
School systems, in the media systems. It's a very encompassing and unitive process from Pakistan all the way to here. Now, certainly the Pakistanis have no issue with us as such, but yet they also believe that the Jews are the sons of monkeys and dogs. System that has evolved for various reasons in the Islamic world. To a degree, it's very early in the Islamic world. Like the Christians, when the Muslims discovered that the Jews were not going to follow them in mass, they turned on us after having been a partly inspired by us. But the inspiration was based on the idea that we would come to understand, not finally, but at the moment, at the time, we would come to understand that they indeed had the greater truth and that we would become Muslims, or in the case of the Europeans, that we would become Christians. And when that didn't happen, they turned on us. And I think it's easy to understand why. And then there are other reasons as well for the anti-Semitism and the Jew hatred, but certainly on an out-front basis, and this is across, it crosses boundary lines, it crosses continent lines. We have no political struggle with the Pakistanis or with the Indonesians. We have no problem with their existence. We have no problem with the way they conduct their lives. They certainly have no problem with the way we conduct our lives. Yet it is a fundamental part of their political structure, a fundamental part of their political dialogue and their media dialogue, that we are an enemy.
That's another area that we really need to discuss further. But we're at the end of this broadcast. It really goes real fast. I Hope that those that are listening will send your comments and suggestions to us at radio@israelscene.com. We really would appreciate it.
Also, I think if there are subjects, particular subjects that people would like us to explore, either for the two of us to explore them or to interview somebody who knows more about that particular subject than we do, we would be glad to hear about that, and we would make every effort to find an expert in, I don't know, the field of transportation or the field of ecology or the field of air transport safety, whatever it happens to be that people are most interested in.
So for this one, have a great day. Have a good Shavua Tov, Yoram.
And let's remember our hope.
Yes.
Hatikvah.